We're picking up from where we left off last week. For those who were here last week, we began with a fundamental question: why should a person be Jewish? What are we doing in this world? And the conclusion that we came to, based on the Masil Sisharim, was that the reason God put us on this earth is because He loves us, and He wants us to have the best time, and getting close to God is the best time, and that's the reason to be able to do it, etc., etc. And that's an unusual thing. It's not the kind of thing that many of us have heard growing up. Most of us have heard we have to serve God, as we mentioned last week, otherwise we will face the flames, you know, and all kinds of other terrible things. And in fact, that's not basic Jewish belief. Now, somebody said to me several years ago when I gave that lecture, they said, you know, I'll tell you the truth, I have no problem with being a religious Jew. It sounds beautiful. I just don't want to have to do all those laws. Now, that sort of limits us, doesn't it? It would be great. I don't mind keeping Judaism as long as I don't have to keep the laws. There's not much left. Ethnic food is just not enough reason, right? So what is it that's going to, you know, motivate a person to want to keep all these laws? And what do you need all these laws for, right? So let's start at the beginning, right? The word mitzvos, what is a mitzvah? What is a mitzvah? Commandment. See, when I was growing up, and your grandmother would ask me to do a mitzvah, she meant like do a nice thing. If you're helping with the bag, do a mitzvah. You know what I mean? So if you felt like it, you did. If you didn't, you didn't. You know what I mean? But like, mitzvah is like a nice thing to do. But mitzvah, of course, comes from the Hebrew word tzav, which means command. Commandments. All we have to do is hear that word commandment, and a shudder goes down our spine. Don't tell me what to do. I don't want people to have to tell me what to do. If I feel like it, then I'll do it. But I don't need these people standing around all the time telling me what to do. I had that my whole life. Now I want to be able to do my own thing and find my own personal expression. So beautiful. So I want to put this into perspective for us so that we will understand. I got engaged to a very nice woman about 17 and a half years ago, who's now my wife. And you have to be careful today, you know, because people introduce someone as their first wife. Hi, this is my first wife, you know, and you figure, gosh, that doesn't sound good for the relationship. But no, it's been 17 years we were married so far, and I know it's been 17 of the happiest years of my life. My wife, it's been about 15, but she wasn't so crazy the first couple of years. But anyway, the idea is that I remember when I first got engaged. It was a beautiful, poignant moment. And at the time, I was running a Jewish youth organization. Now, so that you'll appreciate what this is when you're running a Jewish youth organization, your hours are just very bizarre. You're called upon 24 hours a day. You're responsible for all of the Jews in a particular area. It's very, very difficult, challenging sort of a position. Now, I was living in Los Angeles on my own, and I got involved in Jewish youth work. And when I moved to, take the job in Long Island, so of course I moved back in with my parents. Now, you know, you never grow up. You never grow up. You will never, ever grow up. My mother, God bless her, she should be well, 72 years old. Whenever she sees me, she says, that's a nice outfit, don't get it dirty. You understand? She doesn't know how I got dressed in the morning without her, you know? Whenever I stay at her house, it's great. She does my laundry right away. She tells me to make sure to take something to eat. She does, you know, it's like, you know, take care of, you never grow up. You never grow up. It's a fact, you know? So I moved back in, and I'm in charge of this crazy, you know, unbelievable hours. And my mother, of course, you know, being a Jewish mother, sleeps with her eyes open, listening, you know, anything should happen, you know? So I come in. 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, whenever you finish talking with the last suicide victim, you know what I mean, or this thing or that thing, you know. And my mother's like, who's there? It's me. What time is it? 2:30. Why are you coming back so late? Because I just finished work. Okay. That's fine. They just want an answer. It doesn't really matter why, you know. Who's there? Axe murderer. What are you doing? I came to kill everyone. What time is it? 2:30. Okay. It doesn't matter what the answer is. They just need three questions answered, you know what I mean, and that's it. So, but anyway, So my mother gave up hope on me. It was like, you know, forget it. My hours are too crazy. Even my mother didn't wait up for me anymore. My father, Oliver Shalom, I remember, you know, I had a phone put in my room, obviously. I had that much sense. And It's like 2:30 in the morning, and my father, you know, sees the light on. He comes in. He can't, got up, whatever. He sees the light on. You know, now what happens when your father comes in 2:30 in the morning? What? You're still talking on the phone? I'm going to get up in the morning. Is it responsible? You know, the whole father speech. I covered up the phone. I said, there's a girl on the other line who wants to kill herself. Should I tell her to call back in the morning? You know? So, of course, you know, my father had to confront the fact that, you know, his son was growing up. So he says, you can't talk to him. I mean, forget it, you know. You know, try reasoning. Forget it, you know. Give up. Seven of my parents gave up on me already. So I was used to more or less keeping any crazy schedule that I, you know, had. I remember there was one time, and then says why, I worked for 2 weeks straight, sleeping every other night. So it was like day, night, day, then I went to sleep, day, night, day. So it was like 2 weeks. And there's so much obligation, and you don't have enough money for staff, and you need to do so, try to do more than you possibly can. So I got engaged, and that next week after we were engaged, I had some kind of meeting, I don't know what it was, and ran really late. It's about 3 o'clock in the morning. I get home, I throw myself in the bed, and the phone rings. And I pick up the phone, and it's Simi, my wife now. You know? So I said, oh, Simi, what are you doing up so late? She says, where were you? Where was I? My mother doesn't ask, where was I? What do you mean, where was I? I had a meeting at it. She says, why didn't you call? What for? What? She goes, don't you understand that somebody worries about you now? Don't you understand that being in a relationship means commitment and obligation? No, I said, it never occurred to me. Why? You know, when we first got married, I don't remember this. My wife says this. I'm sure she would remember correctly. But when we first got married and I'd come back in the middle of the night, you know, these crazy hours. So then my wife said, what are your hours? She claims, I said, I keep working until I start to fall asleep and then I drive home. So, could be, you know. That sounds about right. That's going to be a typical job description in Jewish youth work. So, you know, so it was this eye-opening experience. My goodness, you know, it comes with obligations. You now have a claim on my time. But you understand, that only depends on how good the relationship is. The better the relationship, the greater is the commitment. Now, you must have found yourself in relationships. Occasionally, we'll meet a really wonderful guy and something, you know, and they'll say, so when will I see you again? Whenever. You know, I can't predict these things. Life's so wild and unpredictable, you know? So anyway, hey, take care of yourself, all right? We'll be in touch. Yeah, I love you, baby. Bye. You know what I'm saying? And you think to yourself, oh, this guy is so gross. You know? That doesn't matter. We'll still go out with him when he calls again. You know what I mean? But there's this sense of like, you know, gee, why doesn't he call? Why doesn't he get into contact with us? I mean, like, you know, so the answer is because he doesn't want any commitment. Why can't we just be friends? And the fact of the matter is, think for a moment now. You know, you ask people, you know, you break down in the middle of no place, you need somebody to come and get you, you know, who would you call? Now when I say this, I have to say, you know, I usually talk to people in their 20s and 30s, you know. You break down in the middle of no place, you have to call someone. Your parents are out of town. Oh, that's harder. 37, I'd call my mom, of course. Who else would I call? You know? Oh, my parents are out of town. You know? Who would you call? So you try to think of your best friend, and you call him up, and you say, you know, you hear lightning and thunder in the background. He says, hi, I broke down in the middle of no place. You know, it's raining, and it's storming, and, you know, it's my last quarter, and I'm stuck here in the middle of the night, and it's freezing. Can you come pick me up? And the person thinks, well, it's cold, it's late. No. Hangs up the phone. Now, what would you say when you saw this person next? Let's leave that out. But this is a family show. But of course, you'll be all upset, you know what I'm saying? And you will vent on this person. And the person will say, hey, what do you want from me? You know? So you say, well, now I know who I can count on in life. You see? Here I thought you were my friend. I am your friend. No. Friendship means commitment. Commitment means that you're there for me when I need you. Otherwise, you're not a friend, right? Now, of course, if you met somebody in the bus and you asked what time it was, you wouldn't think to call them up at 2 o'clock in the morning to come and pick you up. Of course, it's just, hi, how are you? Good to see you, etc. But when you go through this process of thinking, who's my closest friends are going to be defined by those people who I can count on the most. So a person goes away to camp, and then you go in camp and you get these real warm friendships, you know, and at the end of camp, everybody's crying, and they're hugging each other. Oh, when am I going to see you again? You know, tomorrow we live next door. Oh, that's right, I forgot, you know. And, they make a big thing of the year 19, whatever it is, and they set it on fire down by the lake, you know. And then they say goodbye, auld lang syne, everyone's saying goodbye. It's so beautiful and moving. And, you know, then you don't see anybody for like 4 years, you know, because these are your real close friends. And then you see somebody 4 years, and girls do that, you know, that bonding thing where they see each other from a distance. They first have to go like this. Ah! Like, I don't know, it's like, look at my arm, okay? You know? And I'm not wiretapped either, you know? And then they embrace each other. Okay, it's a beautiful, beautiful moment. Guys are similar. They're like, oh, I haven't seen you in 4 years. How are you? Good. Want a beer? Okay. But you know, I think girls go to this thing, and it's great. I haven't seen you in 4 years. You know, and we pick up where we left off, and it's nice, and it's warm, and we'll share camp stories, and we'll sing songs. It's great, you know. But you imagine if one day your husband walks out the door, and he doesn't come back for 4 years. Your reaction will be a little different. You know what I'm saying? It'll be like dramatic film at 11, you know what I mean? Wife kills husband, you know? So he comes back 4 years later, he says, hey, when you met that friend from camp, you were real happy to see him. How come I disappeared for 4 years and all of a sudden you're upset at me? I'm certainly a better friend. That's why I expect more from you. Because I thought that we have something real. And the more real the relationship, the more I have to's they come with. The less I have to's, the less of a relationship there is. Good, I don't see you again, so we'll never talk again, so we won't go out again. Okay, so I had a nice time, I met you, we said hello, we had a cup of coffee, goodbye. You understand? But if I've made a commitment, and I think there's a real relationship, and there's trust, and there's love, then that means we have to be there for each other. That's the definition of a relationship. And the stronger it is, the more I have to's they come with. The more mitzvos they're going to be. So if your husband comes home one day and brings you flowers, that's very nice. But if he forgets your birthday, that's terrible. Because you expect a, you know, somebody who cares about you to remember your birthday, remember your anniversary, things that are important to you. That's expected. And the more it comes with. So I tell people, I say, you know, I can have a long, hard day, and the things are real difficult, and I come home, you know, and my wife wants to talk to me, if you can imagine such a concept. And I mean, it happens sometimes in marriage, and the spouses like to talk, you know. So you have the option of saying, look, honey, I'm really tired, I'm going to bed. Or you could say, I'm going to push myself because this relationship is important to me. And if I care about this person, then I'm going to talk to them, even when I don't feel like it. You see? A good relationship is not based on I do what I want when I feel like it. A good, real relationship is based on we have mutual obligations and we're there. And we know more than that. The more you invest in a relationship, the nicer it is. The relationship itself. Right? And that becomes a very key thing. Because if you're just in a position of taking, and you don't feel a loving relationship because you feel like a taker. But when you have an opportunity to give back, when you have obligations back, that's what makes it equal, right? Some girls marry a daddy figure where they're not really called upon to do anything, and they can just whine, honey, I can't, honey, don't worry, dear, I've called the repairman. Oh, okay. I got everything. I'm like, yes, of course, honey. You know? And that's really pathetic, you know? But if that's the point, that's what people want, what people want, you know? But an adult relationship, we understand, means that I don't just want to take, I want to give. As such, if this great pleasure is going to be to get close to God, which means to have this relationship with God, if I don't have any I have to's, then the relationship itself is a second-rate relationship. Second-rate. I'll tell you an interesting gemara that I learned when I was in, I guess, eighth grade. Right? We would pose the following question. Who gets more reward for doing a mitzvah? A Jew or a non-Jew? What do you say? Yeah? How many say Jew? How many say non-Jew? How many people have not understood this question or don't speak English? Because altogether, between both groups, a third of the room put up their hands. Okay, let's try this again. El duo el mitzotios, porque duo mitzotio. Yeah? Jew or quate nato Jew-o? Yeah? Who gets more reward for doing a kebab? Keeps kosher. Jew keeps kosher, non-Jew keeps kosher. Who gets more reward? How many people say the Jew? How many say the non-Jew? Okay. Great taste. Less filling. Anyway. So we, of course, all said the Manjew. Gosh, extra credit. Every kid understands extra credit. You know, I don't have to, and I did it anyway. Isn't that nice? Look what I did. I cleaned the living room, even though you didn't ask me to. You know? Yeah. So the Gemara, of course, answers that the Jew gets more reward. Now, why should that be? So the answer is because in order to have a more meaningful relationship, you have to be prepared to invest more time in it. And to invest more time and commitment means I have to's, not just when I feel like it. So you can picture this, right? You get up in the morning. It sounds like you're always in hella. You can picture this? Anyway, so you see this? Yes? Okay, anyway, you wake up in the morning and you look at your room. Now, I used to do this for guys, but people tell me that girls, you know, can also relate to this, you know, that when a girl is a slob, they're a much worse slob than a guy is a slob. I can't imagine that, but this is what people tell me. I have no first-hand experience. But in any event, you know, you wake up in the morning, you look at your room, and you say, I cannot live like this anymore. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to clean my room. All right? Any pizza boxes over 6 months, go. You know what I'm saying? All those empty juice bottles, you know what I mean? And, you know, all the little things that they have, you know, little munchies hidden under the pillow, you know? Anything turning green goes, you know what I mean? I'm going to hang up every other outfit, you know what I mean, until the closet is full, you know? I'm going to look through, you know, you have that determination. Every now and then, you this thing hits you, you wake up, you have this determination. Okay? So you spend another 2 minutes in bed, stretching, getting ready to get up and clean that room, and suddenly your mother walks in. Look at this mess! What a pigsty. You cleaned this room up today. I don't want to anymore. I wanted to before you told me to. Now I don't want to. You see? We're so contrary. We don't want to have any obligations. We only want to do what we feel like it. You know? And that's why, if you don't believe me, watch this. You can see this so clear. You know, we have two big fast days coming up, the 17th of Tammuz and the 9th of Av. And you see people who decide to fast on a fast day. So normally you find a guy who never eats breakfast in his life. He's never once eaten any breakfast. He often will miss lunch. It's not a big deal. Around 4 o'clock he suddenly realizes he's hungry, he grabs something to eat, he's in the middle of stuff. If it's a fast day, 9 o'clock in the morning he's pacing up and down. I'm never going to make it. I don't feel good. I better lie down. I have a headache. Oh my gosh, I need a cup of coffee. You never drink coffee. I know, but today I need coffee. But I'm not well. You know, what's this? You know, what's going on here? I thought, you know, you never eat. You see, but once you tell me I can't eat, I want to. That's how we are. So God says, listen, you want to have a casual relationship? You can do that. Right? Person says, you know, I have a great relationship with God. I don't talk to him, he doesn't talk to me. Now, that's an approach. But if you define your marriage that way, it's going to be a little depressing. I have a great marriage, I don't talk to him, he doesn't talk to me, you know? Now, of course not. I want this loving, caring relationship. We will always be there for each other, to meet each other's mutual needs. And I know that we can depend on, no, and we can depend on each other. All this kind of beautiful stuff, like you're writing those cards with the blurry people on the front, you know what I mean? You send to people, you know what I mean? We should have this close, loving, caring, you know? We know marriage comes with our have-tos. If we want to have a meaningful relationship with God, it comes with our have-tos. It comes with mitzvahs. And if not, it doesn't have to. So have a casual relationship. More casual. And the thing is, the Kadosh Baruch Hu lets you define it. As intense as you want, or as small as you want. So that's why we need mitzvahs. But let's understand what the mitzvahs are and what they do. Okay? Mitzvahs come in two flavors. Yeah? Do's and don'ts. Yeah? Or those of you, I don't know, do they still have romper room? No? Yeah? Do-bees and don't-bees? Remember those? Do they have those? No? There I go again, making references to things from 20 years ago. No one knows what I'm talking about. You know, soon they're going to put me away. It's all right. I don't mind. I'm ready. I'm ready. I'm definitely. When they put me in one of those places to sit and weave baskets, I say, no problem. Sign me up, you know. Put me on a little grassy lawn. You know? But anyway, I kept telling my children, if I get old, don't let me move in with you. Please put me in a home. Leave me. Give me a basket to weave. I'll be fine. Anyway. So, where am I? What am I talking about? Hi, mitzvahs. Do's and don'ts, positive and negatives. Okay? How many positive commandments are there? 248. Why do I feel like this is a group that knows a little bit more than the average debate crowd. I don't know. We're getting too many correct answers too quickly. Anyway, right there, 248. 248 is a very important number in Judaism. How many organs of the body, counting bones and major organs, etc., are there in the body? 248, huh? What do you know? Right? Avram, right? Abram. What was his name? How much did it equal numerically? Yeah, 243. That's why we added the hay on. Right? You made it from Abram to Abraham. So someone told me once, I guess he took the ham out of his diet and put it into his name, but that's not correct. What he did instead is he added on a hay, which equals 5, moved him up to 248. How many words are there in the three paragraphs of the Shema? The 245. That's why we repeat the last three words to bring it 248. You see? Or when you're by yourself, you say that Kel Melech Naaman at the beginning to make it 248. Yeah. So what's this 248? What's all this 248 stuff? So 248, as we mentioned, are the parts of the human body. Okay. How many negative commandments are there? 365. What is 365? Days of the year. Mm-hmm. So we see something happening here. I once asked a group to define Judaism. So you get all kinds of different answers. You know, it's a history, it's a discipline, it's a group, it's a people, it's a nation, it's a, you know, belief. It's all this kind of nice stuff. And somebody will eventually say, it's a way of life. It's a way of life. I said, you mean something you have to do completely every day? No, something you do once in a while. You know what I'm saying? Like 3 times a year, you know? Then it's not a way of life. That's an occasional habit. You know what I mean? That's something that pops up every now and then. A way of life is what mitzvahs are meant to be, are something that affects our entire body all the time. Mitzvahs, well, who is it who said it? Oh, yeah, Tevye the milkman. We have commandments to tell us what to eat, where to sleep, right? Even how to wear our clothes, right? So, yeah, laws affecting every aspect of our entire being all the time, right? Those are laws. It's interesting, by the way, that there was this Jew who was in prison who was granted one day to come out. This was during the Middle Ages. He was locked up, you know, for some chopped-up charge. They said, let him off on one day. So he asked the rabbi, what day should he get out? Yom Kippur, Pesach Seder. He told him, the next day. Whatever day you can get out, that day to a Jew is extremely important. We don't wait for occasional moments. Every day is the most important day of our life. So that being the case, right, we know mitzvahs are our complete body and all the time. But let's go a little bit more than that. Okay, there are positive commandments and negative commandments. Why do we have positive commandments and negative commandments? Well, they obviously have a different message. The Maharal explains the following. What makes us a human being? You read the story in creation. It says, God took from the dust of the earth and breathed in a spirit of life, which tells me that I am, by definition, half dirt and half God. Half physical and half spiritual. Right? Now, there are some beings that are completely physical, but do not have a soul. What are they? Right, animals don't have a soul. I'm sorry. They are instinctual. They are programmed. And this was driven home to me most dramatically by this documentary that came out about, I guess it must have been about 5 years ago, by the Disney people called Lion King. And I didn't take my children to see this movie, of course, but people brought me the Lion King book and the read-along book and the song tape and the sheets and the underwear, and my kids have lions all over the place. One of my two-year-olds didn't want to put it on, goes, the lions will bite me, you know, I was like, I wasn't sure how to respond, but anyway, so I read through this book the first time, and I couldn't believe that this is a children's book, because, I mean, I guess kids aren't bright enough to catch this. The story works as best as I can follow. There's this good lion, and he gets chased away by his bad uncle, who then turns over the entire prairie lands to the wolves, who go and... What? Oh, I'm so sorry, the hyenas. This, by the way, is a Jew. That's the definition of a Jew. A Jew is someone who you tell a joke to, you know what I mean? And you get to the whole punchline, and they say, no, she's wearing a yellow dress. And they tell over the entire joke again, right down to the punchline. They're always surprised they didn't get a laugh. Because the first time you said it was a red dress, and it was really a yellow dress. You know what I mean? You said it was in Minsk, it was really in Pinsk. You know what I mean? Mercedes, so they were hyenas. Right? So they turn it over to the hyenas, and they go around eating everybody. Eventually, Simba comes back, and he fights his bad uncle, and at the end he gets up and all the animals cheer, right? All the animals, the giraffes, the zebras, the antelopes, you know what I'm saying? Everybody's cheering. But it's pretty clear from the story that Simba and his friends are now going to eat them. When you pick that up? You see, you know, and that's why, you see, if I was writing this book, I would have written at the end that Simba announces all the lion become vegetarians. You understand? Because we like you guys so much. Yay! Everybody would be very happy. But instead, you see, the animals are very upset. Because we don't want the hyenas to eat us. We want the lions to eat us. You know what I mean? And I'm sure that as the zebra's insides are being ripped out, you understand, and eaten up by the lion, he doesn't care how many people are singing Circle of Life. You know what I mean? To him, it works out the same. I'm getting eaten up, you know? So the point of the matter to me seems that, you know, nobody's going to say Simba's a bad lion because he's eating his closest friends because I'm a lion, you know? All contemporary philosophy today basically stems from two sources, right? Calvin and Hobbes and the Far Side. This is contemporary philosophy, you know what I mean? So there was this Far Side where there's this alligator sitting on the, you know, the witness stand, and he says to the prosecutor, "Of course it was in cold blood, stupid. I'm a reptile, you understand? What do you expect, you know?" That's the story. The story is I'm just an animal. You can't expect any more of me. And no one thinks Simba's a bad guy because he didn't decide to go off and become a vegetarian. He's a lion. Then there are beings that are completely spiritual in Jewish thought. A being that's completely spiritual is an angel, right? An angel. Angels don't really have choice. You can't have a bad angel and a good angel. An angel, like Milton will tell us, will get into a fight with God and go down into hell and make his own business. It doesn't work that way. You understand? Angels are completely spiritual forces. They have no choice. The only thing that has choice is when you can take that animal and that angel and put it together. Then you have a human being. Now a human being has a choice whether or not he's going to be an animal or whether he's going to be an angel. Whether he's going to be dirt or whether he's going to reach up to the heavens and connect to God. I just have to tell this story once. I was doing a Shabbaton in California, the Big Bear Mountains. Now, I moved to California. One of the reasons was because I grew up in New York and I hated snow. And I never wanted to see snow again. Of course, in California, people think snow is cool, you know. For that matter, they think anything is. Exhaust is cool. Everything's cool, you know what I'm saying? So we move out. So we're going to go up to the Big Bear Mountains because we'll see snow and it'll be cool. That? Sure. So we go up into the mountains, into the snow, and we have the Shabbaton. We have about 80 kids up there, all with very little background. And the ones with very, very, very little background, I was doing Saturday morning instead of a regular service, an introductory service, explaining about the prayers, etc. So one of the blessings, I came to this point, and I explained how a person is basically made up of half dirt and half God, and we have to make a choice. Now, two guys came to this Shabbaton, unbeknownst to what was going to happen to them, obviously, because you never get anyone to come to a Shabbaton if you tell them what it's really about. You know, so what are we going to do? Well, we're going to pray, and we're going to sing, and we're going to pray, and we're going to eat, and we're going to dance, boys with boys, girls with girls, and then we'll pray, and then we'll eat, and then we'll learn Torah, and then we'll pray. So you never do that. So you always say, what's going to happen? We're going to have a band. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are you doing? Oh, Saturday night we're going roller skating. Oh. Mm-hmm. You see? So then you ignore like most of the weekend. You throw out like this one little bite. So we said we're going up to the mountains. We're going skiing. Oh, we weren't really going skiing. We were going tobogganing. We weren't really going tobogganing. We were going tubing. You know what I mean? So and you had to like inflate the tube yourself. Anyways, that's important. But we finally just gave everyone old donuts. We had no problem, you know. But that's not the worst. They were filled with cream. Anyway, so they didn't have a hole in it. But anyhow. So there's like, you know, these two guys who came, who were not from the intellectual elite, you know what I mean? Like they came expecting a ski weekend, and suddenly they see we're praying, we're eating, we're praying, they can't figure it out, you know? These are guys who like, you know, Saturday night we played Capture the Flag, and they like dressed up in military fatigues and black their hair, you know? They're like, you know, like they came and they said, freeze, you got it, please don't shoot me, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's just a game, you win, you know? So these two guys are there, and they're sitting in this, The beginner's minion. And I mentioned this idea, how a person is made from the dirt God puts in the spirit of life. Fine. So 6 months later, I'm in one of the local yeshivas, and a guy comes up to me and says, "Oh, Rabbi, how are you?" So I look at this guy. He looks like a typical yeshiva guy. but he doesn't sound like one. Then I say, hey, where do I know you from? He goes, I came to that weekend, you know, the supposed to be a ski weekend up in the mountains. Remember? I said, oh, you were the guy with the military fatigue. He says, yeah. I said, what are you doing here? He says, because of you. I said, because of me? What did I do? He says, you remember you were talking about how a person is like half dirt and half God? So I thought about that a lot, you know. And I went home then, and I thought about it, and I said, am I dirt? I'm not dirt. I looked at myself in the mirror, and I said, hey, I'm not dirt. He looks at me, and he says, I'm not dirt. I said, no, you're not, sir. Please don't hurt me. He says, if I've got God inside of me, I'm going to find it.
Yes, my friends, another exciting success story from Rabbi Olofsky's archives. Join us next week with... We'll hear about how the Pope switched his red yarmulke for a black one. But first, anyway. That has to be a true story. I had a guy, I had a guy in Ushimea who looked like a, you know, typical guy, he's in yeshiva, you know, etc. And he shows me, you know, he says, well, you know, where I used to be studying before I came here, you know. He shows me a picture. He's a priest. He used to be a priest. And he's sitting there, you know, shaking hands with someone who's pinching his cheek. It's the Pope. He studied the Vatican. The Pope's like, oh, you're so cute, you know. I said, get me a copy of that picture. He says, why? Well, I want to show people. This is my student, the one without the yarmulke. Anyway, not important. So, but this message of I'm not dirt, you understand? This is a message that we need when we approach mitzvahs. Because since I have this part of me that's dirt, this part of me that's animal, that has these animal desires, they have to be controlled or the animal runs wild. So, someone gets you angry, don't kill him. You see something you want, don't steal it. You can't eat everything. You can't sleep with everybody. You can't do everything you want. Rein in those animal passions and focus them on something positive. By the same token, right, you have this spiritual side to you that needs expression. That's what the positive commandments are for, to help us give spiritual expression to who we are. And that's the delicate balance we live in. So let's take an example, just so we can see how this works. Right? Let's take an example, Shabbos. Okay? Every seventh day, we have Shabbos, and we're not allowed to do any malacha, which is defined as creative work, whatever it is. So now, when you take something like Shabbos, it's a fascinating thing because you have people who say, well, I rest by doing this or I rest by doing that. But we understand that I have a part of me that's dirt. I have a part of me that's God that allows me to connect to God, which was we mentioned, that relationship with God is going to be the most powerful thing. So God tells us every seventh day, there's going to be a wave of holiness that's going to fill the earth. Right? And this holiness is going to surround you. People say, well, I don't feel it. I don't feel it. Okay. So right now there is a beautiful symphony playing. How many people hear it? Oh, that's good because, you know, some places I speak, a lot of people are hearing it, and then we, you know, have to bring out the drug test. But right now, this is good. No, I hear the music. You know, I'm sure you do. Just could you stand up to the side? We'll be in a moment. Anyway. No one hears the music, but everybody knows that the music is playing right now. Is that correct? You know that the room is filled with music. The hills are alive, and it's awfully frightening. Anyway, there's music playing in the room right now. Radio waves. It's passing through. So how come we don't hear it? This is not such a hard question. Because what? You're not tuned in. Okay. Yeah, you don't have a receptor. Right? Excellent. You know, some people would say a radio, but okay, a receptor tuned in is the same basic idea. So we get ourselves a receptor, yeah, and we turn it on, all we hear is static. How come? So you need a filter. If you don't filter out the background noise, you're going to pull in everything. So you have to filter out the background noise, bring in the music, and then you'll hear beautiful music. I should add on, there's two other things you have to do. You have to listen. So if you turn it on and leave the room, you won't hear the music. And the third thing is, you have to perhaps have a course in music appreciation so that you can sense what it is you're listening to. That's fine. So God tells us every seventh day there's a wave of holiness that fills it. And people say, I don't feel it. So of course you don't feel it. You know why? Because first of all, there's so much background noise interference. We live in a world where there is so much background noise that it is just unbelievable. Right? I'll give you an example. The 1950s, the 1960s for sure, but the 1960s, they told teachers that you had to prepare your classes in 8-minute segments. Why? Why? From commercials, right. You waited every 8 minutes and the commercial came on and that was it. You know, you didn't have to concentrate. People learned to only concentrate for 8 minutes at a time. Now that, of course, is ancient history. Today, nobody watches TV anymore. They channel surf, right? So they're watching like 115 channels at the same time, you know? So you're watching 4 movies and 3 sitcoms and 2 sporting events and MTV and a Japanese cooking show. Oh, yeah. And someone told me, Rabbi, you're behind the times. You don't have to flip the channels anymore. You know what I mean? You have all 25 shows on the screen at the same time. You just keep looking from box to box. And that's why if it seems to you like the kids coming up in high school are dumber than you, sure, they keep adding more channels. So now the attention span is about 1.2 seconds, you know? So that's the reason why I had a friend of mine who was a teacher. He used to keep changing his expression so they'd think it was a new channel. And that's the reason why we come through everybody. There was an article in the New York Times already 5 years ago that they had to cut, you know, make movies now with quick cuts and shots and this and everything going on because nobody can concentrate. You know, it's a conversation for 5 seconds. Click, change the channel. So you have to just keep going. And that's it. So everyone's brains are fried. You talk to somebody, you can look at their eyes. You just see they're someplace else. You know what I mean? And that's it. They're floating off somewhere and out of space. So that's not good. We don't want that, right? Okay, so that's one. Oh, a person goes outside. Of course, they don't have that. They have the Walkman. And the Walkman's going 24 hours a day, you know, and playing meaningful lyrics. Kill yourself and snuff it. Snuff it. And this guy's like crossing the street, you know, looking at him. Hey, Bob, what do you say we go get some trench coats and go visit high school? Oh, how about that? You know what I mean? You know, they're listening to music blasting and try to have a conversation with someone. And they just keep nodding. What would you say? Huh? Yes, it's no problem. Sorry, you don't mind if I take the car? And run you over. That's it. They're like, you know. That, of course, pales in comparison to the phone. You know, the telephone. Now, I have 7 daughters. Anyway, which I love them all very dearly. I have 1 son. Me and him, we hide in the room, and the girls talk on the extensions. When the phone rings in my home, it is a religious experience. It's the phone, and everyone dashes for one. Hello, you know, everyone's on the phone. Hello, hang up, I had it. Tell them I've got it already. Tell them to get on the phone, oh, is it? And there's nothing, when the phone rings, everything else stops and you dash across, you know? And that's why, I mean, to my mind, I mean, you know, I'm at an age where I don't, you know, anyone who's calling probably wants money. I don't want to talk to them, you know. So the phone will always ring. Tell them I'm dead. You know, I'm sorry, my father says he died. Oh, do you know when you'll be back? Oh, no, he doesn't. He's not here now. I don't know. Dad, when will you be back? Not for a couple of days. So I was in the middle of talking with someone, and the phone rang. You know, and the person says to me, it's the phone. I said, yes, it is. Says, aren't you going to get it? I said, I'm talking to a real-life person. That's more important than the phone. You ever see, you come by to visit someone, they spend the whole time talking on the phone? You know? So, you know, I'm assuming that you have an appointment, not like you know, just walked in, you know, and they had to make some phone calls. But, so this person was flabbergasted by this idea that you don't automatically, in a Pavlovian way, answer the phone. No, I said, a real-life person is more important. I couldn't even imagine this. That's the great thing about call waiting, because you're talking to somebody, you say, wait, there might be someone more important I want to talk to. And you click on the phone, and you stay on like call waiting for like 20 minutes. They come back and say, sorry, it was an important call. What am I, chop liver? You know what I mean? You know? Sorry, I had to talk to him. He was important, you know what I mean? So I'm talking to a real-life person. You know, I run to the phone. So I'm at this guy's house, and I'm talking to him one time, and the phone is ringing. So he's going to, you know, he's cool too. He doesn't have to jump for the phone. He's talking to me. He's nodding. And you just watch his eyes. You see, they keep going like this. like darting to the side. Yeah, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And finally, about seven rings, he couldn't take anymore. And he leaped across the room, smashed his leg on the side of the couch, grabbed the phone. Hello? Person hung up. Now, this is before they had those fancy redial things. So he calls everyone he knows. Hi, Mom, was that you? No. Okay. Hi, Harry, was that you? No. He missed a call. He missed a call. The phone. So now that's already passé, because today, here in Israel, everyone has a telephone. Now, my brother lives in America. You know, he had a cellular phone. This was like 5 years ago. A cellular phone in America was still a status symbol. You know what I mean? A cellular phone. So he comes in, and we go to this burger joint next to the old bus station, Massavoger. You ever see it? I go there for the ambiance. In any event, you know, I like to, like, scrape something off the table and put it in. You never know what's there, you know? Fine selection of taste, you know? So, I won't even develop that idea. I got a lot to say. But anyway, so as we're sitting there, this guy who's, you know, Hasidic Shafal, sitting at one of the tables, his telephone rings. My brother says to me, he has a cellular phone? That's a little more common in this country, you know. Then some 18-year-old army guy comes in, his telephone. He goes, he's got one too, you know. The Arab working behind the counter cutting the shawarma, his goes off, ring, ring, ring. In the front, there's a guy begging dressed in rags. His goes off, ring, ring, ring. In this country, it's like the cellular phones are like ringing and buzzing. You go out to eat the whole time, ring, ring, oh, you know what I mean? And you can't talk to the waitress because she's on her cellular phone. And I find it to my wife, let's call her and maybe we'll get her to come by. Hi, these are the people at table six. Maybe you can come by, you know what I mean? It's unbelievable. Like, I've seen people go out, like four people will go out. Everyone's talking on their cellular phone to somebody else, you know? I guess they made it into a party, you know what I mean? Like everyone's talking to someone else. And this is amazing. You know, so it takes you over it. It's getting worse and worse. Someone told me, I heard this from Dr. Bright from Great Neck. His fellow's walking down the street in Manhattan, and he sees somebody talking to his hand. He says, hi, Harry, how you doing? Okay, good, maybe we'll get together for lunch Tuesday, etc. Guy says, what are you doing, you crazy? So what do you mean? So you're talking to your hand. What do you mean? You don't have a cellular phone. Cellular phone, that's a passé. I have in my thumb a hearing device. I have a speaking device in my pinky. Implanted in my wrist, on my palm is the dial. I have a battery at the back of my wrist, and I just go like this, and I make a call. This guy says, what? It's unbelievable, you know? He looks down, he sees a guy, a lunatic, talking to himself. Okay, so Bob, I want to take another 500 shares of IBM, and let me know what's doing with AT&T. They say, what are you, mister, you crazy? Says, what do you mean? He says, you're talking to yourself. He says, no, I'm not. He says, well, you're not even talking to your hand. Talking to my hand? That's 6 months old. I have a listening device implanted in my ear. I have a speaking device put into my voice box. I only have to think the number. The battery's in the back of my neck, and that's it. You know, I don't do anything. That's amazing. Walks another two blocks. He sees somebody doubled over in pain. Ah! Ah! He says, mister, are you okay? He says, yeah, I'm getting a fax. Ah! It gets worse and worse. This is crazy and crazy. There is no way. There's no way to continue to function, you know? So Kazakhash Barakwa says, I'm going to tell you this spirituality around you, how you ever hear it. There's so much going on. So Kazakhash Barakwa says, okay, turn off everything. Turn off the TV. All right, but you, no, take off the Walkman. No phones, no cellulars, no faxes, no email. No, can't pop anything in the microwave. You can't cook. No cooking. All the cooking's done before you. I'll go to the mall. You can't drive and you can't shop. No shopping. So what am I supposed to do? To distract myself. I can't play video games. No TV, no radio, no music, what am I supposed to do? Says, hey, let's try focusing on the spiritual side of you. Oh, what number is that? No, it's no number. The force is inside of you. You reach inside and you will discover a part of yourself you have never realized that you had. Aha. So now how do we do this exactly? You see, that's why we have positive mitzvahs. You see, there are certain people who only have the negative mitzvahs, and they don't never get to enjoy a Shabbos. You know? This girl tells me, she says, I live in Manhattan, I have an apartment, and I don't know, I keep Shabbos, I don't get any spiritual thrill from it. I said, well, what do you do? Well, I light candles, and I quickly daven Mincha and Ma'ariv, And then I have a meal, and I go to bed, and I sleep until like about 10 o'clock the next morning. And I get up, I have some lunch, and I go back to sleep, and I get up and I make Havdalah. She said, I'm not turning on any lights. I said, that's true, but I think you've missed the point. You see, you've managed to cut out the background noise, but then you never focused in on the station. You never got the music. So now we have to do positive things. We're supposed to dress ourselves nicely and sit down at a nice table with good food. We're supposed to sing Zmira. We're supposed to have Divrei Torah. We're supposed to have an experience where we're using our mind and our soul. We're supposed to use the mitzvot, the positive ones, to connect in this wave of spirituality that's surrounding us. And if we can do that, if we can then focus on what's real around us, then we can go on to be able to feel something that's extremely positive and powerful and spiritual. The unfortunate reality is that there are too many people who don't understand what the mitzvahs are supposed to be. You see, we're relating to God, and that's kind of hard, because God is infinite, which I may have mentioned in scientific terms, is very, very big. As such, how am I supposed to relate to God? God is infinite. Who can relate to infinity? So we take infinity and we look at it from a whole bunch of different angles, 613 different angles. The mitzvah is there to open up that door to God. But so many people open up the door and forget to look inside. It's a problem with the mitzvah. You can do a mitzvah and forget why you're doing it and forget that the whole purpose of it is to help you tune in to experience something greater. We have mitzvahs because we want to establish a very, very close relationship with God. And we know that this relationship is going to be as much as we're going to put into it. And the purpose of the various commandments that we have are to do that, to help us form this bond and relationship with God. And that's what we're supposed to try to do. That is the role of a Jew. The reason a person does mitzvahs is to be able, in the end result, every mitzvah has the same reason, to feel close to God. And if a person doesn't, then all they did was go through the motions. They turned on the radio, but they never listened to the music. And if they listened to the music, maybe they never took a course in music appreciation. Because a person who has felt a spiritual experience wouldn't trade it for anything. You know, I ask people sometimes, if God came down tomorrow and told you you have a day off, what would you do? No, so nothing counts. Next Shabbos, you have off. Wow. So what would you do? I said, I'd do exactly what I do every Shabbos, because I enjoy it. I enjoy it, and it's meaningful, and it's spiritual, and I wouldn't trade that pleasure for anything. The unfortunate thing is most people have never experienced that, because even if they've taught themselves to go through the motions, they never taught themselves why or how. I had a young lady who came to me, and she says, well, I believe that there's a God, and I believe he gave the Torah, but I don't know why I have to listen to the rabbis. Okay. I said, what is it that's bothering you about what the rabbis say? He says, well, for example, they say you have to cover your hair. And they say that's what the verse means. Maybe I think the verse means something else. I said, you know what, let me save you a lot of time. I said, I can prove to you, to your satisfaction, that the rabbi's interpretation is the correct one. You're still not going to want to cover your hair. You don't want to cover your hair because you don't want to cover your hair. She says, you know, you're right. I don't want to cover my hair. I said, you're right. So why don't you deal with the issue? She never heard that idea before. She says, what do you mean? Don't you just have to do things? I said, I suppose on one level. But me, I know I can't do it unless I can find a meaning in it. And the ultimate meaning of that mitzvah that I do has got to be to connect me to God. And if I don't have that connection, then I just can't do the rote action itself. You know, you take a look and you find Maimonides, Sefer Chinuch, so many others give reasons for the commandments. But the bottom reason is always the same. God said so. But if you get a little smarter, you can look into it and figure out from my own point of view what's in it for me. And ultimately, the reason is going to be you're going to find how you're going to use this as a means to tap into God and get that the tremendous, tremendous pleasure that is the whole reason of our creation. Amir Tashem. Okay, next week we're going to talk about prayer, which is a good way to connect to God as a positive commandment. Thank you.